Are you ready, Alabama?
Hello? What, who's there? What's going on?
It's time to enter the doghouse.
Whatever's happening here, just knock it off.
Call the big dog now at 866-485-9867.
These kids are weird, man. They're weird.
Live from the Big Dog Production Studios.
How you doing?
It's time for the highly sought-after, fabulous final hour of the Tom Abraham Show.
That might be listed in Revelations as the cause for the apocalypse.
Here he is, the head of the household, the Big Dog.
You're the smartest guy I ever met.
Tom Abraham.
You want me to do this crap?
I guess I'm on here. Am I on? Can somebody respond?
And welcome back. The highly sought after fabulous 5 o'clock hour of the Tom Abraham Show. Cream's last hour on the show as the phone screener, and I cannot bust on Cream anymore because McKringleberry just took the cake. He hit the text window with, please let Cream know the box on the desk that plays music periodically is a phone. When it makes noise, answer it. That's good work by McKringleberry. Getting your chops busted by an 80-year-old guy. I mean, that might be the best text since ever. That's good stuff. All right. Ezekiel Elliott, we've been talking about it earlier in the show and throughout the show from time to time, and joining us now with the final word on it is Kevin Turner from 105.3 The Fan in Dallas. Kevin, welcome back. How are you, man?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, and best wishes on his future endeavors to Kareem.
Yeah, I don't know what Kareem's going to do. His name is Bailey, and somebody said call him Irish Cream, and then we just shortened it to Cream, so that's how he ended up with, you know, his nickname. But yeah, I don't know where he's going to end up going now, but I'm sure he's got great things in store. There's nothing like being a phone screener. You're in the business. There's nothing like being a phone screener to launch you into bigger and better things, right?
So I somehow got lucky enough to avoid that. I probably would still be in the business if I had a phone screen.
By the way, you do some kind of a video thing. What's the shortcut to get to that site where you do your little KT videos and stuff like that? Because that stuff's pretty good.
Yeah, I think the best place to find it is on my Twitter feed. It's at @KTFunTweets. Simple as that, and the link's on the bio. We just have a little fun around the office from time to time. Just kind of give a DFW perspective of humor in the world.
Yeah, it's good, man. It's a lot of fun. All right, not a lot of humor out at the Star probably today when this deal came down. You know, that Jerry Jones, he may be a Hall of Fame owner, but he's not a Hall of Fame prognosticator. Who the hell was feeding him information? He seemed to think that Zeke was going to be fine, and then he gets a 6-game rip.
Okay, I'm just going to assume that there was so much jubilance over his Hall of Fame induction that he was just spitting out sunshine no matter what.
Yeah.
Because I mean, look, I knew. No, I'm not saying I knew like from any, like a source in the NFL or anything, but I had a really, really, really good feeling that a suspension was coming down. But 6 games I did not see coming. I thought maybe 2 or 4 would be realistic, and that's what it may end up being in the end. But 6 games, I think, kind of caught everyone off guard. But when it comes to Zeke, man, this goes all the way back to college. Zeke has never had anyone correct him, and It finally happened today. And there's a lot of Cowboys fans who are very unhappy and think it's unfair, and I don't like how the NFL handles their things, and I don't like the NFL's policies most of the time. But the truth of the matter is Ezekiel Elliott needed to be suspended. And this is what happened, and it was pretty extreme, and we'll see where it goes from there. But my guess is this story is going to be going on for a while.
Is this not, though, in line with what they did with Ben Roethlisberger? When he was younger, earlier in his career, when he got himself jammed up, he never got – ended up getting charged with, domestic abuse or raping that woman in a bathroom in a Georgia club or whatever it was. He never ended up getting fully charged or anything in that deal, but he ended up with a 6-game rip, and I think they knocked it down to 5, maybe. Maybe it was 4, but this isn't going any lower than 4, I would think.
Yeah, 6 to 4, and I think you're right. I think that's the Cowboys' best hope right here. It gets down to 4. And it is right in that line. I think maybe because it's close to home, what Cowboys fans are going right now is going, why did Josh Brown only get one game for admitting that he beat his wife? Like, Zeke is in a denial phase right now. And, you know, I think it's real strange, though. Like, if the police can't find anything, well, the NFL goes and does their own investigation. Well, it turns out the NFL found out more than the Columbus Police Department. And if you're very – like, it doesn't take a rocket science to put that together. Zeke, okay, an Ohio State icon, a Columbus, Ohio icon, and the police couldn't find anything on him.
Giant
the NFL does an investigation and can.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's pretty simple to put together.
Yeah, you would, and that's the It sounds cynical, but it's true. And to be honest with you, this throws a little bit of shade at Urban Meyer. And Urban Meyer's, you know, the second best coach in the land in college football. There's no question about it. He's right there. He's got national championships, two different universities, three championships, and all of that. But there has been times, obviously, in his run at Florida, where you know it seemed that he was one to facilitate and look the other way to bad acts. And in this case here, it just seems to be there's another, you know, the haters will say there's another Urban Meyer player that was, you know, that they looked the other way on.
Okay, so I covered the NFL draft for our station. I do this every year. So I go to the combine, and I've gotten to know a lot of people that go to Ohio State, okay? And it's just through happenstance and work in the media there and things like that. And they're telling stories about that year. If you remember, Joey Bosa went third. And then Ezekiel Elliott went fourth.
Right.
Okay. Well, they were roommates. Okay. And Bosa got out of that mess. Like, they were roommates, and Bosa was like, dude, this guy's partying way too hard for me. I'm partying too, but I've got to move away. Noah Spence is a guy who everyone thought had more trouble than Zeke or Bosa. He had to get transferred to Eastern Kentucky. He was kicked out of the Big Ten. Okay. And he was not on the Cowboys draft board. Okay. But he's not a bad kid at all. Like, Zeke was a wild dude, and he still is. And whatever happened, you know, the St. Patrick's Day thing we know about, what happened at that bar we know about, I personally think it was covered up. You know, that's my opinion. I'm a partner with the Dallas Cowboys on my station, but I think that was covered up by Zeke's people or whoever. And I think it's pretty easy to kind of find out what happened. You talk to enough people who were there, they'll tell you what happened. And, you know, it's one of those things where, look, I've dealt with a lot of Cowboys fans in DFW today who are kind of mad and thinking it's unfair. And it might be, six games might be unfair, but we're talking about domestic violence, and I want the NFL to go strong on domestic violence. And this is a guy who needed to be corrected, and six games to me is just fine.
Yeah, and some people say, well, this is a different deal. You know, I mean, there hasn't been anything done, like you say, legally, you know, with this deal. But, that, you know, the NFL, just like your job, my job, you know, they're not beholden to whatever it is that the, you know, the law says. They've got their own set of rules, and you're going to have to play by that. So I think that that's something, too, that plays into it. The one thing I don't ever remember, and I've been around for a little while now, this external expert advisory panel. Have they always done this thing? They had the former attorney general for the state of New Jersey, Pete Harvey, Ken Houston. We know Ken Houston, Hall of Famer. Tanya Lovelace. Okay. You know, just saying. I think once I saw Tanya Lovelace at a work on a poll in Atlanta. But hey, she's the chief executive officer of the Woman of Color Network. And Mary Jo White, former United States attorney and former chief Securities and Exchange Commission. So he went before this panel. But have we ever seen this before where they've had these external advisory panel dealing with something like this? Or is this a result of the whole Ray Rice fiasco?
I haven't. And this might have something to do with that Ray Rice thing. But it also kind of may be a thing like where it's trying to get to the bottom of everything. And this is not a shot at, you know, our public safety officials and things like that. But you look at what happened in Baylor, too, a few years ago.
Right.
Okay. Where you have to start a full investigation because the Waco police was covering up things. Like, so you start to deal with, like, Columbus police. I'm not saying they covered it up. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying it's worthy of doing an investigation on your own. And honestly, the way I think this should all work, and the NFL, to me, I disagree with their policies. I've said that earlier on this segment. I know. But I think, like, they should leave it up to the team. Okay, let the team decide how they want to handle it. Let the team decide how you want to.
Like, yeah, but can they decide that? Can they decide it? Because they'll end up suspending them for, like, the Georgia State game. You know what I mean? They play the Giants opening night.
That's your fan base you're going to deal with then.
Yeah.
That's your fan base you got to answer to then, all right? And if your fan base is cool with it, then they got to ask some questions about themselves. But, I mean, we got to admit there's not a lot of consistency here. We do go back to the Roger Goodell thing, but how does the Josh Brown thing add in? You start comparing things and the Ray Rice thing. Hey, I got video of Ray Rice in the elevator, okay? I got nothing on Zeke besides these pictures that the NFL found, that the Columbus right. Police Department did not find. But I'll say this too. I think this is all really interesting. There was the head investigator in this. There was a big story written about her. She was a lifelong New York Giants fan. How did Josh Brown get one game and Zeke get six? And I'm the guy who's saying that six games is fair. So it's not like I'm some cowboy homer or anything. I think all of this is fascinating, and it's the NFL's dangling their toes in dangerous waters if they continue to try to legislate things on their own.
Yeah. Kevin Turner with us, 105.3, the Fan in Dallas. I just don't understand why they just can't have some kind of standardized deal here, you know, just standardize it all. And then this way you know what you're looking at. You know what kind of rip is out there for what happens. And you talk about things that are inconsistent. I mean, even if this case of Josh Gordon now, and in his case, look, this guy's been a real knucklehead. He's done a lot of bad stuff. But the last two or three suspensions he's gotten has all been around ganja. It's all been around marijuana. The kid can't stop smoking a wacky tamaki, right? But yet, you got Roger Goodell now saying that he wants to sit down with the union and talk about, you know, how they're going to handle marijuana going forward. There's going to come a point in time where it's going to come off of the ban list or something is going to change with marijuana, yet he still won't let Josh Brown or Josh Gordon even like go to a football game. I don't understand. Well, if you're starting to come around to this idea, why is it that this kid's career has been ended basically over ganja?
Wouldn't you say that one domestic violence incident is worse than seven failed drug tests for marijuana?
I would say, yeah, you would think.
I think I would. I mean, we're dealing with this in Dallas with Randy Gregory out for an entire year. We're sitting here going, well, he can't pass a drug test. Okay, that's fine. Well, if Zeke actually hit that girl, and it seems like he did, we don't have proof or total proof or video proof, I guess, but if Zeke hit that girl or harmed that girl in any way, then we got issues here, man, and that's a bigger deal. That's worth being out for a year if it's true. But, again, finding the full proof is a very difficult thing. The Ray Rice thing really did clutter everything up when they just rushed out and gave two games, but they put themselves in this position. So it's a big thing. This is going to be Tom Brady-esque, though, and I'm not looking forward to it as a Dallas-Fort Worth guy having to talk sports every day. I'm not looking forward to a whole year of, you know, Deflategate Zeke style. Like, that's not going to be fun at all.
But the league can evolve. I mean, everybody wants to talk about the Ray Rice thing. You know, maybe this is an homage to the fact that they screwed that up. I mean, you know, it doesn't mean that it would always have to be the same. Plus, I think there's something else in play here. When the Ray Rice thing went down, you know, the numbers were still super strong. Nobody was talking about cord cutting and lower ratings and everything. They didn't have a poll out there like the one that they had just recently that said of the 12% of people who watch less NFL football now, half of them say it had to do with Colin Kaepernick. Quarter of them say it has to do with Colin Kaepernick and the players not respecting the national anthem. And 26% of them say it has to do with off the field issues like domestic violence. I wonder if there wasn't that downturn, if the league would have done the same thing. I wonder if this is a response to those kind of comments that people are turned off by the NFL because of the thuggeration.
I think there's a little bit of pressure there. I think that's a really good point that you're bringing up. I think that's right, man. I think there could be something there. I mean, it's really hard to put yourself in Goodell's shoes because he has been so all over the place on a lot of these issues. I think you're right, though. They can evolve, and maybe this is a good step in evolving. Guys, here's how this goes now. If you're going to have a domestic violence incident, okay, you're going to get the book thrown at you. And whether it's six games, but, you know, the appeals process is going to be interesting. I immediately thought when it was six, I immediately thought it was Goodell – well, preparing himself for an appeals process to bring it down to four. But it's just such a cluttered thing. I'll say this, man. I don't even, on that poll you're talking about, and I saw that too. I sit there and I ask around. I'm like, who's filling out these polls? Because when it comes down to it, everyone's watching on Sunday. Okay, I don't think many people are. It's an easy thing to say. I'm 12. Not watching this game because of Colin Kaepernick. I'm not watching this game because of Zeke. No, you're still watching the game. You're just saying that for attention. That's what I think.
Well, I think 12%. I mean, the thing is that it was only 12%. It was kind of misleading because it made it look like 24% of people don't watch the NFL because of Colin Kaepernick. No. 24% of the 12% who say they watch less football. So 12% say they watch less football. That means that, you know, whatever it is, 88% watch the same or more than they did in the past. Yeah. So that's a different part of it. Okay, Darren McFadden, very fine running back. It's not like this guy sucks. How is his health? Is he ready to take the load? Let's say it's four games, ultimately. Is, you know, how is he, and is he the main answer here? Him and Alfred Morris, I guess, the guys that will take up the slack.
Yeah, I actually just flew back to Dallas from Cowboys camp yesterday. So I've had a full week watching them in practice. In the preseason game, in the Hall of Fame game, Alfred Morris looked like the better runner. But in practice, Darren McFadden is clearly a little step faster than Alfred Morris. And I don't think they have any concerns at all in terms of, I mean, look, yeah, it sucks that you lost Zeke, and that is a difference maker. But I do think they feel really comfortable with Alfred Morris, with Darren McFadden as your starter, with Rod Smith, who is Jalen Smith's brother. They feel really comfortable about that threesome. They signed Ronnie Hillman for insurance in case there was a Zeke suspension, and I think Ronnie Hillman will probably make the team for the first 4 weeks or whatever. I feel pretty comfortable with Darren McFadden. This is his third year in the system. He fits the style that they want. His pass blocking skills are still a little bit of a concern. But other than that, I think they feel really good about it. And I'll say this too. If Dak Prescott needs to go win games with his arm, they've done some things to help with that. The draft pick of Ryan Switzer in the fourth round is very helpful here because now you've got Dez, Cole Beasley, Terrence Williams, Ryan Switzer, along with Jason Witten. Ryan Switzer is not easy to cover. I mean, he's about as uncoverable as Cole Beasley is. And they're going to get packages with both of those guys on the field to kind of compensate with a short passing game to compensate for the lack of running.
Yeah, Kevin Turner, our guest. All right. Does this mean now Zeke can play in the preseason games? Will we see him tomorrow night against the Rams? And do you think they'll work him some just so that you know he doesn't get back in October and dude hasn't played a game? You know, so do you think that we might see more Zeke Elliott carries over the next four preseason games just to kind of make sure that he's ready to go when he after the you know 4 week break that he's probably going to have?
See, I'm not sure about that. I don't see him playing tomorrow, but you know the Cowboys. I was at practice yesterday in California. And the media guy comes over and he goes, guys, no media availability today or tomorrow, Friday. Don't report. And I said, well, what if there's a Zeke suspension? And he goes, I'm just telling you. He goes, you can come out here to the field, but no media. We're not going to have anyone here, so don't worry about it. Now, tonight's interesting. There will be some Cowboys. Jerry Jones throws a big media party out in California every year. Personally, I got screwed because I had to fly in today.
Yeah.
But, you know, Jerry will probably talk to some of these reporters off the record or maybe on the record. There's been no answers because there was no media availability at all today.
Now, last year, finally, when we dealt with the Brady suspension, you could kind of look at the first four games and say, well, you know what, they're going to be 3-1 with or without him there in that spot. If we're looking at this deal here, though, Giants at home, you know, opening up the season there with the Monday – it's a Sunday night game to start the season. They go to the Broncos, to the Cardinals, home against the Rams, home against the Packers, and then I'm not even going to consider the 49er game. There's no way this guy's going to be out for six games. How much do you think it can really matter? Is this a difference between them maybe opening up at – 4-1 versus 3-2. They're not going to go 2-3 or so. This is not a season debilitating type of thing, I don't think. What's your take on it?
I really don't think it is either. I mean, I think it's a type of thing where it's going to make the division race a little closer. I mean, the Giants are the team the Cowboys lost to twice last year. You went 13-3 and you lost to them twice. I'm with you, man. I think 3-2, and there's a chance at 4-1 getting out of the gate. Now, if you do stumble at 2-3, the 49ers, as you said, are right there around the corner. So if we're going to take the – let's say it stays at 6 games, 2 of those games are the Rams and 49ers. So you're kind of catching a break there. You'll take your chance winning one of those games against some good teams. I think 3-3, 4-2, I think those are good expectations to have for the Cowboys through the first 6. And Zeke's going to be a really fresh monster if he stays in shape through his suspension and is ready to be unleashed in the second half of the season.
All right, Kevin, excellent work. I appreciate you jumping in on short notice. Give that Twitter account again so that they know where to find you, because you do some really good stuff.
Oh, thank you very much. The fun tweets can be found at KT Fun Tweets, at KT Fun Tweets. And always just looking to have a good time. If your listeners holler at me, I always answer back, because I think Twitter's a good place to spread the love.
All right, man. Appreciate you. Good stuff.
Take care, man. See you next time.
Thanks. He's good. I like that guy. That guy's solid. Throw him a follow.
Yeah, he's
good. At KT Fun Tweets. Like that. Dave the Dog Beaner at the text window. Great. Now I want to throw up. Please play Yay Alabama to make it better. Is that what he meant? Is that? No, that's not Yay Alabama.
Roll Tide. Rolling. Roll it, baby.
I think that's Yay Alabama. Is that the official Yay Alabama? Might not
yes,
be.
Yes, Lord.
Them beefy,
come on
beefy
with
boys.
Your maroon and white. Bring on them big, beefy mama boys.
Bring on them big, beefy mama boys.
Who is that singing that? Is that Bear Bryant singing that? They get
No. It's not. We're not that close to the season yet. We'll get that full version in. She talks about Bear. She says, I remember when Bear Bryant used to look up at me and say, Shirley, do you shake your booty? You've never heard the full version of that?
I can't stomach all the way through.
Oh, it's pretty funny. It's pretty funny to hear her sing, Shirley Q sing Yay Alabama. Dave, that's all I got at my hands, all right? That's all I have at my fingertips. Big John in Huntsville. No more Auburn fight song. I'd rather hear a fat girl fart. Go get Arky. Oh, no, wait a minute. He's a fat guy. Wait, I can cover that. I can make fat jokes because I'm a fat guy too. If you're not a fat guy, you can't make fat jokes. If you are a fat guy, then you can make fat jokes.
What else are we missing out on? I mean, you've done called people fat today. You've called Rick in North Fort Myers ugly.
No, I didn't say he was ugly. I just said it's,
no. You
it's
you
not
definitely
a
flat out said he was ugly, and then you went on. You definitely did.
It's not a FaceTime kind of face. That's all I'm saying about it. I mean, I love the guy. It's just. I'm a Cat says on the Twitter window, I won't watch any team Kaepernick is on. I'll still watch other football. Ruben says, fly Rick in for the draft. Yeah, no. Pretty sure I can't get that through management.
Cream said, has he taken any shots at me yet today? He's
Cream?
Taken several. And you just
no,
haven't, you
no,
just haven't
we've
been listening.
No, we've been just flowers and bouquets and flowers with Cream. Are you kidding me? We haven't said anything negative about Cream.
Gumdrops and rainbows.
What is it? Gumdrops and rainbows.
Yeah.
That's all it's been. Gumdrops and rainbows. Zach says, you know why they call it the $1 million band? Because that's what the PA system they pipe the music through cost.
Ouch.
I don't know, man. That's harsh.
You sure the season's not here yet? It feels like it is. People
I mean,
taking
it's
shots
on,
like
it
is. Yeah, it is.
I'm just saying, man, it is flat on. Grumpy says about the other guy's text, so he'd rather hear his wife fart? It is on, man. It is on. Love it. All right, let me get out of here. When we come back, we'll rewind it. There's been some pretty good stuff. This is the Tom Abraham Show. Back with more after this on 730-1039. Yep.
No time to get on the phone? Tweet the big dog at Tom Abraham Show. Here's Tom Abraham.
All the guests on today's show and every show, pretty much since the beginning of this show, appear on the Woody Anderson Ford VIP hotline. Get on down there now, Moy. I'll tell you what, you can't miss with the work that they're doing with that new showroom. It is spectacular at Jordan Lane and Sparkman. And the new service lanes have been open now for several months. They're outstanding as well. Remember, you don't have to be driving a Ford to be serviced at Woody Anderson Ford. You're going to want to get a Ford once you go down there. And right now you can get a great deal on a 2017 Ford pickup quite honestly, they got to make room for the 2018s. And don't forget about Henry's Mustang Cafe as well. Great place to have breakfast or lunch, Henry's Mustang Cafe. On that Woody Anderson Ford VIP hotline today was Joe Rexrode from the Tennessean. Also, Josh Ward was in, our SEC insider. Matt Rudy joined us to talk some PGA Championship. Let's see who else. I don't know if Kevin Turner made it or not. Kevin Turner was in there. And Gary Davenport was in from the Bleacher Report. Well, let's take a listen and see who made it. This is your Woody Anderson Ford Rapid Rewind. So give us the short and dirty here now. First of all, we know that Derrick Henry, we know that DeMarco Murray's not playing. I thought, man, maybe we'll see a little more Derrick Henry. Then he had that little foot deal. What do you know about his playing time and Marcus Mariota, who will start? How much time are they gonna play him?
Yeah, I mean, I think for both of those guys, for Derrick Henry, for Marcus Mariota, for Delanie Walker, Rashard Matthews, I think it's gonna be. I mean, honestly, if they took the first possession they have and scored with it, that might be it. But I bet you won't be more than a couple series. So yeah, I mean, I think Derrick Henry, even regardless of the little tweak, which he seemed to be fine, he came back a little while after that, but I think either way, he was going to get, starter treatment, and they want to get a look at these guys competing to be the number three back.
Yeah, so it wasn't a situation, because I know a lot of people, after watching him in the scrimmage, especially at the stadium, a lot of people say, man, what would that guy look like with 20, 22 carries, and of course in Alabama, we see him, the way he wears people down, and he's so dynamic in the second half and in the fourth quarter. It'd be a little bit different in the NFL, but still, that's where he really shines, like a lot of big backs have. Over the years, but even though DeMarco Murray's out here, they know what they got with him, right? I mean, they don't need to overdo it there. They really got to figure out who's going to be, how many backs are they carrying, and who's going to be that next guy, right?
Exactly. They drafted Kalfani Muhammad out of Cal, and he's a tiny but really fast and shifty, exactly what you would think of as a change of pace for three back. But David Llewellyn has looked really good in camp, and he's to me, like, if you're the Titans, how much are you really going to use a change of pace third back? As much as they are going to scramble to get enough touches for Derrick Henry this year and try to keep both those guys happy, I don't see them using a third back a lot. So to me, it's almost like, does it make more sense to just have the best, most complete backup in case someone gets hurt? That's kind of the question. But I think some of that those guys will help answer with how they perform in these games.
Yeah. What are some of the other things that we're looking at, and what do we suspect that we'll see after Marcus Mariota? Because, again, they got Matt Castle, who is coming off of an injury as well, and that's a veteran. I don't know how much of Matt Castle we need to see.
Exactly. And later in the preseason, he'll get some work, but I think Saturday night is Alex Taney night all the way, and this camp has been much about Alex Taney, trying to demonstrate whether he should be kept as a third quarterback, because he has no more practice squad eligibility, so they can't go that route anymore. And it's possible he could replace Castle as the number two, and at times he has looked very good in this camp. I don't think they would get rid of Castle. I think it's really the decision is going to be two or three. And, this is a big moment for Taney, because they do love his potential, and you can see how he's developed into a nice young quarterback, but you got to be able to play when the lights are on. He didn't play his best in that scrimmage a week ago, so this is really important for him, and I think he'll get most of the work.
Josh Ward with us. The other comment he had was regarding his quarterbacks who had earlier this week came out and said that, they felt like they were treated unfairly or that there wasn't communicated properly and all those types of things. And he said that, look, I'm trying to give everybody a chance to win a position. It's my job to do a good job of making the best choice and decision for the team. And one of the most difficult things is sometimes not what everybody else would like it to be. You can't make everybody happy. Everybody wants to play. I have tremendous amount of respect for those guys as competitors. I don't know that that was their complaint. I think their complaint was more about the way it was communicated to them that they were all going to have an opportunity to compete. But it's really a tough road to go down for players who have transferred out of the program for them to not look bad saying that.
Yeah, and with that situation, it could be that part of what the players are saying is correct, but that also Nick Saban got into the game and didn't like what he saw, wanted to see what Jalen Hurts could do, and fairly quickly things took off. He had that fumble early in the game, but it could be part of what they're saying is true and that communication could have been better, but yeah, I don't know that the coach is going to tell them exactly what's going to happen because the coach doesn't know exactly what's going to happen, especially when you're trying to figure out things between three quarterbacks. Now, Nick Saban could have had an idea that I might go with Hurts more than I'm willing to lead on to these guys that are older than him. And in that case, you know, that's unfortunate. That's also just going to be reality that the players are not going to get all of that information. But I would remind them that things change when you get out on the field and coaches are going to alter what their decisions are. So I would say that there's probably some truth and they might have some points to it, but that's an unfortunate part of it. The one thing I agree with was I didn't like the level that Saban criticized Blake Barnett with his decision. I think we talked about this at the time, Tom, that, you know, it's not ideal that Barnett took off in the middle of the season, but if he had waited it out through the end of the year at Alabama, one, there is a chance that something happens and Barnett gets to play again. It wouldn't have worked out that way in hindsight, but also that Barnett gets 5 years to play. And I don't like that Nick Saban essentially called Barnett a quitter because Barnett gets 5 years of eligibility. If he waited till the end of the season, that means he wouldn't have played last year. He wouldn't have played the year before, and he would be sitting out this year. So he would be leaving himself 2 years to play football. And if you're an athlete, I think you should maximize your opportunity. With Barnett's choice at the time, that's what he did. So it's not ideal that he would leave in the middle of the season. It's unfortunate, but there are a lot of things that are unfortunate sports, and a lot of times there are advantages that coaches get. That's a case where the player took advantage of his own right.
But I don't know how I feel about 16, 17, and 18, the dreaded Green Mile, being like, forget making a move down the stretch. It's just it's like a negative thing, you know what I mean? It's just, can you make par down the stretch? If you par out, you know, you're probably going to win the tournament if you're one of those guys that's in contention, or you just don't blow up. On the other hand, it might be, you know, kind of exciting watching guys, you know, crash and burn on 16, 17, and 18, but I think I'd rather see, you know, two out of the three closing holes be holes that you could move on.
So you'd think that after however many years they've been playing the Masters at Augusta National, and we've had these great finishes on the back nine, that somebody would see that and say, you know what, there's a reason why that's the most popular tournament on TV and why people love, you know, to see what's going to happen. It's because of exactly what you're describing. People have a chance to make a birdie or make an eagle and make a move, and if they make a mistake, they have a chance to make a move in the opposite direction. So personally, I would always rather see what we see at Augusta and see what we saw with Henrik Stenson and Phil Mickelson last year at the British Open. Chances for guys to hit heroic shots and make birdies. That's my personal taste. I don't really fire for it when, you know, two guys are competing to try to shoot 71 and kind of ease it into the clubhouse.
And that's the way it'll be on Sunday. We're probably going to be watching like we did in so many U.S. Opens. We're just going to be watching guys make 16 pars, and that's the guy that won the thing. And you know, it's nice when there's some movement. Look, speaking of 16 at Augusta. I mean, you can't tell me. They pick the most favorable pin position on 16 because you have so many guys that are going to burn that cup coming off of that slope and have the possibility of a hole in one. And it's one of the most fun things to do is to watch 16 and see guys, you know, suck it back down off that hill and have it stop 4 inches from the hole or burn the cup or something like that. And they do that intentionally. If they wanted it to be brutal, they'd put it way up there in the back, you know, like in the back right where it's tough to get to. But they put it where there's a funnel, and it's very exciting because of that.
Sure, 13 is the same way. They put that pin up front, and they say, all right, if you're going to take the risk and bomb a tee shot down there, we're going to give you the chance to hit a shorter iron into the screen. But if you put a little too much spin on it, you could back it up in the water And if you're a little too scared to go for the front pin and you're, you know, hit it over the back or you're way back there on the back of the green, you've got a scary two putt. And to me, that's the perfect combination of, you know, if you have the guts to go for it, you can make an eagle. And if you don't, and making a par there is like making a bogey. And, yeah. And I think that's the feel that you need to give tour players, where they get to holes and feel like they're giving shots away to the field. If they don't try to do something, they might not feel so comfortable doing. To me, if you're just trying to make conservative pars, tour players can do that. And what we're going to get, not so much this weekend, but in general at U.S. Opens historically, it's, you know, how do we take risk out of it, make boring pars, and be the most boring player? And that might win you a U.S. Open, but it doesn't win you many new fans.
Gary Davenport with us from Bleacher Report. All right, Bills were very active making moves today. Some very interesting things. You got a text from a Bills fan in Decatur, Alabama, coming off of the trade, of course, of Sammy Watkins to L.A. and then gaining, the different moves that they made. It says here, I understand why, but it's a clear indication of how the Bills feel this season. If I was a vet like Shady McCoy, I'd be very leery to be the next to go. Tyrod can't catch a break with a full cupboard of weapons. He won't quit. So he'll keep the Bills respectable. It saves him $6 million cut after this season, takes the Bills off the hook for $18 million next year. Also, forgive me and all Bills fans, we have no faith in our draft process. They've bumbled that for the last 20 years. They add Jordan Matthews, who's reliable and not as dynamic as Sammy Watkins, but they add a bunch of draft picks. But just talk about adding Matthews and losing Watkins. Did they really lose that much in terms of weapons for Tyrod Taylor?
I suppose you could say they did if Sammy Watkins had shown any ability to stay healthy, which he really hasn't. His contract's up after this season. The Bills had already declined to pick up the option for next year, which kind of told
That's
you
stupid.
What they thought of Watkins moving forward. I mean, I didn't love the Bills receivers before. I don't love them now. Now they've got, you know, Jordan Matthews, Zay Jones, Anquan Boldin. They've got a roster full of slot receivers and no one really to play on the outside. The new regime is being aggressive. They're going to remake that roster in their image, and I think it shows they're committed to a rebuild. There's not going to be any – for the past 5 years, the Bills have been a eight or nine-win team trying desperately to get that one extra win that might sneak them in as the 5 or 6 seed in the playoffs and break that drought that's been going on since the turn of the century. I think they're going about it the right way. I mean, at some point, you kind of have to blow things up a little bit and start over. I don't really know that they accomplished a whole lot today, though, and it certainly isn't going to make Bills fans feel any better because it's going to be another year of missing the postseason.
Yeah, and it doesn't look like it's going to – you know, they seem to be perpetually stuck in that same deal. And with Tyrod Taylor – yeah, I really don't know where you're going with him. You know, he seems like a guy that I think there's a limit, a ceiling on how far, you know, he can take you. All right, but what about from the Rams' standpoint now? They're trying to build something with Jared Goff, who's got to come off of this complete bust of a season he had last year. If, in fact, Sammy Watkins somehow stays healthy, all of a sudden the Rams may have got something here.
Yeah, if Watkins can stay healthy, though, he would easily be the best receiver on that team. And if you want to give Jared Goff a reasonable chance at being successful, they had to upgrade the weapons. It is, I mean, Robert Woods, who's now reunited with Sammy Watkins, is a guy that's been known more as a blocker, as a wide receiver, than a pass catcher. And Tavon Austin has been one of the larger disappointments at the position during the span of his career. I think he's the third highest paid wide receiver in the NFL this year, so that was money well spent.
All right, not a lot of humor out at the Star probably today when this deal came down. You know, that Jerry Jones, he may be a Hall of Fame owner, but he's not a Hall of Fame prognosticator. Who the hell was feeding him information? He seemed to think that, you know, Zeke was going to be fine, and then he gets a 6-game rip.
Okay, I'm just going to assume that there was so much jubilance over his Hall of Fame induction that he was just spitting out sunshine no matter what. because, I mean, look, I knew – no, I'm not saying I knew from a source in the NFL or anything, but I had a really, really, really good feeling that a suspension was coming down. But 6 games I did not see coming. I thought maybe 2 or 4 would be realistic, and that's what it may end up being in the end. But 6 games I think kind of caught everyone off guard. But When it comes to Zeke, man, this goes all the way back to college. Zeke has never had anyone correct him. And it finally happened today. And there's a lot of Cowboys fans who are very unhappy and think it's unfair. And I don't like how the NFL handles their things. And I don't like the NFL's policies most of the time. But the truth of the matter is Ezekiel Elliott needed to be suspended. And this is what happened. And it was pretty extreme. And we'll see where it goes from there. But my guess is this story is going to be going on for a while.
Is this not, though, in line with what they did with Ben Roethlisberger? When he was younger, earlier in his career, when he got himself jammed up, he never got ended up getting charged with domestic abuse or raping that woman in a bathroom in a Georgia club or whatever it was. He never ended up getting fully charged or anything in that deal, but he ended up with a 6-game rip, and I think they knocked it down to 5, maybe. Maybe it was 4, but this isn't going any lower than 4, I would think.
Yeah, 6-4, and I think you're right. I think that's the Cowboys' best hope right here. It gets down to 4. And it is right in that line. I think maybe because it's close to home, what Cowboys fans are going right now is going, why did Josh Brown only get 1 game for admitting that he beat his wife? Like, Zeke is in a denial phase right now. And, I think it's real strange, though. Like, if the police can't find anything, well, the NFL goes and does their own investigation. Well, it turns out the NFL found out more than the Columbus Police Department. And if you're it doesn't take a rocket science to put that together. Zeke, okay, an Ohio State icon, a Columbus, Ohio icon, and the police couldn't find anything on him.
Yeah,
the NFL does an investigation and can.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
pretty simple to put together.
Yeah, you would, and that's it sounds cynical, but it's true. And to be honest with you, this throws a little bit of shade at Urban Meyer. And Urban Meyer's, the second best coach in the land in college football. There's no question about it. He's right there. He's got national championships, 2 different universities, 3 championships, and all of that. But there has been times, obviously, in his run at Florida where, it seemed that he was one to facilitate and look the other way to bad acts. And in this case here, it just seems to be there's another, the haters will say there's another Urban Meyer player that was, that they looked the other way on.
Okay, so I covered the NFL draft for our station. I do this every year. So I go to the combine, and I've gotten to know a lot of people that go to Ohio State, okay? And it just through happenstance and work in the media there and things like that. And they're telling stories about that year. If you remember, Joey Bosa went 3rd. And then Ezekiel Elliott went 4th.
Right.
Okay. Well, they were roommates. Okay. And Bosa got out of that mess. Like, they were roommates, and Bosa was like, dude, this guy's partying way too hard for me. I'm partying too, but I've got to move away. Noah Spence is a guy who everyone thought had more trouble than Zeke or Bosa. He had to get transferred to Eastern Kentucky. He was kicked out of the Big Ten. Okay. And he was not on the Cowboys draft board. Okay. But he's not a bad kid at all. Zeke was a wild dude, and he still is. And whatever happened, the St. Patrick's Day thing we know about, what happened at that bar we know about, I personally think it was covered up. That's my opinion. I'm a partner with the Dallas Cowboys on my station, but I think that was covered up by Zeke's people or whoever. And I think it's pretty easy to kind of find out what happened. You talk to enough people who were there, they'll tell you what happened. And, it's one of those things where, look, I've dealt with a lot of Cowboys fans in DFW today who are kind of mad and thinking it's unfair. And it might be, 6 games might be unfair, but we're talking about domestic violence, and I want the NFL to go strong on domestic violence. And this is a guy who needed to be corrected, and 6 games to me is just fine.
There you have it. That is your Rapid Rewind. For this, the 11th of August, 2017. We'll come back with a final update and a final PGA Championship update as well right after this on 730-1039. Yum.
Wipe your paws. It's time to enter the doghouse.
Fight song short. We're running out of time. We got to get an update with T-Mac. It's a doghouse sports report.
The Miami Marlins owner Jeffrey Loria has agreed to sell the Miami Marlins to Derek Jeter, a Derek Jeter-led group, for $1.2 billion. Michael Jordan is reported to be among investors. The sale will not become official until it receives approval from the MLB. Ezekiel Elliott has been suspended for 6 games for his alleged role in a domestic violence case from last July. The NFL stated in their report that the advisors of Todd Jones, the NFL Special Counsel for Conduct, said they were of the view that there is substantial and persuasive evidence supporting Ezekiel's role in the domestic violence case. The Buffalo Bills traded wide receiver Sammy Watkins to the Rams for cornerback E.J. Gaines and a 2018 second-round pick. They fill that spot by trading cornerback Ronald Darby to the Eagles for Jordan Matthews and a third-round pick. The Bills now own 6 picks in the first 3 rounds of the 2018 NFL draft. And after an hour and 45-minute delay, the PGA Tour is kicked back up. And Jordan Spieth trying to take advantage of that, already birding the first hole back. I'm Tony Mack, and that is your Doghouse Sports Report.
Yeah, it's not going to be enough. He'll make the cut, but he's not going to be a factor. Kevin Kisner leading at 8-under, par, back-to-back 67s. Hideki Matsuyama, 7-under now, made a birdie also on the way. Matsuyama is 6-under for the day. It would be the best round of the tournament so far. Jason Day just made a bogey and dropped back to 4-under. Louis Oosthuizen is also at 4-under. Chris Stroud, he's an American. Never heard of him, but he's an American. He's at 4-under. Ricky Fowler is at 3-under, so he'll be in the mix as well. Alabama's Justin Thomas is at 2-under, so he's still in shouting distance. He's 4-under for the day, having a great round. And right now, these guys are taking a little bit of advantage of the wet conditions there. They're being able to be aggressive here. Those that have 8, 9, 10, 11 holes to play yet still can be pretty aggressive. Jordan Matthews, by the way, Madison Academy's Jordan Matthews, one of our own. So he is now a Buffalo Bill. Good luck with that. See how that whole thing works out. It's going to be a good sports weekend. Got a lot of preseason football. You got scrimmages at Alabama and Auburn, which we may or may not know anything about. Shrouded in controversy. Bo Mattingly in Arkansas saying that he's doubting the relationship between Gus Malzahn and Jared Stidham. Look at the video at the Twitter page. It's weird. I haven't seen that opinion yet. Yankees Red Sox all weekend, PGA Championship all weekend, and Michigan for NASCAR. Does not suck. Cream, thank you for the effort and the work that you did for us. Good luck in whatever you do. Roll Tide to you. T-Mac. We'll talk Monday. I'm Tom Abraham, and this is 730-1039. Dog.
Sports Radio 730 and 1039. The UMP. WUMP.